Welcome back, and once again, you're listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast. My name's John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm Matt Brender.
And this week, we're mixing it up a little bit. We have been interviewing geeks, as is our wont, recently, here in Season 2 of the Geek Whisperers. And that's been a lot of fun, but we had no geek on the line for tonight, and we had something that was staring at us in our daily lives, our daily work lives, so we thought we'd put on our old Geek Whisperers hats and talk about something that we struggle with as people who try to maintain and create relationships that have personal and business value on the internets and on the social web or whatever you call it these days. So we're going to talk about, I don't know, Amy, how you were, it's your topic. How would you put this topic? Do tools make the man?
That's exactly it. I am absolutely wrestling right now with, can you automate relationships? Which may be stacking the deck in my frame statement. But
I'm already shaking my fist at you.
My genuine question is, I am fascinated by the amount of tools that are currently being developed to do everything from, I mean, you know, you've got the classic send a mail to 50 people and makes it look like it's individual. But you've got same tool that applies to DM on Twitter now, which has been my sacred ground, right? So you couldn't spam people over DM or, you know, a group message on DM, which is less of a question.
You've gotten automated messages on DMs. Thank you for following me and crap like that.
I unfollow people promptly. The minute they thank me automatedly for following them, I unfollow them. And that is a true story.
It's true. So there are a lot of tools out there. So there's both tools to like track people in large groups.
Sure.
And some of them overlap with tracking influencers. I mean, there's folks like Tracker and Little Bird and things like that. Now, you were saying there's Social Bro, which I have never used, that has some sort of a white label, some sort of a mass send.
You can mass DM people. And so it's similar to the old mail send programs, you know, where it's a two-line. So, you put in a value. It could be their Twitter handle. It could be their first name. It pulls whatever that is. And then the message, it's got some kinks in it.
Yeah. And so, and Maddie, am I missing any others? There's tons of social tools. I've lost track of them. But so there are some others that let you manage relationships in mass?
Yeah. I think it gets tricky. And when we frame it on the relationships at mass, I think that's where we're all going to lean towards the side of the cantankerous comms ninja here. But when I think about managing at scale, it's also about managing followings, right? And as influencers rise, as the unicorn horn grows, the audience expands on each and every social platform. And we have just so many of them these days where you want to get content out to each of them and keep them alive or at least keep people interested and, you know, be part of a community on whatever community people are on. So some of that takes some tools that will help automate that to make that manageable.
See, but it's one thing to have a system of alerts. It's one thing for your phone to go off when you get a DM or, you know, something like that. A notification is one thing. But, you know, number one, anybody in the sound of my voice, some all needs to be burned at the stake. I'm so tired of seeing those kind of automated things come out.
The sum all posts of these are how many people followed me this week and how many impressions I created.
Yeah. And the business is being made on the fact that it's free if you let them send this tweet out to the masses. But dear sum all, that makes me want to never, ever use or pay for your tools. So it's a terrible business model. The end. But I'm obviously cantankerous today. So
yeah, and I want to balance that with my favorite.
But hold on.
Ooh, okay, never mind.
So alerts are one thing. I will live with alerts. I want to talk about that's one aspect of managing the relationship. I'm talking about responding. So if you give me a gift, I'm Southern. I write you a thank you note. I don't mass produce a thank you note. I write you a thank you note, and that's the expectation I have of relationship development.
That sounds reasonable. So before we hit record, Matt, you were saying that no, tools, you're a tool using, you know, primates.
I'm a primate. I've got opposable thumbs and I'm proud of it.
So Amy, part of what you're objecting to, I sense, Amy, is the, I'm going to use the word deception. That's not quite the right word.
I would use it. I know you're moderate here, but I'm going to be on a limb. Yeah. I feel I feel deceived. I feel it's inauthentic. If I found out, I would absolutely have words with someone. If they told me, hey, I used this tool, didn't it look like I was engaged with you? I would be like, didn't it look like I just unfollowed you while we were standing there? It's not cool.
And that's so interesting. You reminded me of a conversation with someone in our audience, a past guest, actually, Hans DeLine here. And he was complaining about automated tweets of any sort whatsoever, which I think is a good kind of introduction into this broader tool set. I'm a huge fan of Buffer, which is a wonderful app that lets you, you know, post a link and it will send it on multiple sites from LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, etc., and just manage that at scale for you and give you some analytics on the back end if you're curious. But just the idea of being able to syndicate very quickly is helpful to me. And he says he is strictly against anyone posting tweets or anything automatically. If you didn't send it by hand that instant, you are somehow being insincere.
Do you remember Scott Stratton at Unmarketing when we had him on? I felt in the middle. You felt more strongly pro-Buffer. I felt in the middle. And Scott's point, and convinced me on air, I have to say, is if you send it when you're not there, you create an expectation that you're ready to engage in a conversation and that you're just admitting that you are broadcasting as opposed to engaging. And I was like, you know what? He really has a point. Like, why should I tweet when I'm not awake? Because don't I want to engage with the audience who, you know, tweets live what? I mean, do they even have a half-life of 10 minutes these days?
Mm. Well, there you get to the context, Amy, is what is your business goal, right?
Yeah.
So I think one way of kind of untangling this mess that we're in, oh, can I automatically tweet? Can I use Buffer? Can I send the same DM to five people? Is I think taking a look at context and taking a look at the text and the subtext or the intent and the signaling of the channel, right? If we look, these are different channels. Different channels are treated differently. You wouldn't mind if Oracle, the corporate Twitter account, spat out headlines all day, right? Because you don't care about, well, I don't care about Oracle, but
you don't, CNN. CNN?
CNN, like, right? It spits out headlines all day. It's a robot. Right?
Yeah.
So that's one context. And I think people are perfectly capable of realizing that sometimes Matt's at the keyboard and he's talking about his day or talking about something that's cool. And sometimes he's spewing out headlines of stuff that he's read in the past couple days. And I think people are perfectly capable of keeping that separate in their minds. I mean, when I send out my newsletter, no one expects that to be a personal email from me. And in fact, I sent out 5 or 10 emails the other day, and to which I just changed by hand with like a caveman, changed the first name on each one and sent out the same text to 5 people because I wanted to invite them to a certain program I was doing, and I had the wording, and you know, there was no, and I didn't CC everybody on the line, but it wasn't a personal email. I did add a sentence or two on a couple of them. So
Sure. Personal touches are nice, but that's where I find this conversation just insane. That why should we do something like we're in a big room of people and we want to talk to a lot of people, and we're saying, well, no, you have to go whisper to each individual person or else you're being insincere. And when there are times where it's appropriate to stand on a table and shout, like, hey, everyone, here's what's going on. I'd love for you to be entertained.
But Matt, in meet space, when you stand on a table, like when you're Amy at V Bacon, that's a signal and it's a context that now I'm addressing the audience. So
right.
I think a lot of it is the signaling part. Like here,
exactly.
And we're in a virtual world, a virtual channel, and nobody expects if I put a message on my wall, unless they don't understand Facebook, which most adults do these days, that it is a personal message to them. They know it's a public message to everybody. So you have to signal, are you on the table or are you whispering into somebody's ear?
Totally.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Twitter is far more of a whisper. So I'm going to argue this is channel by channel because some of the encroachment has been on the platform I hold dear, Twitter. And DM is exactly what it should be. It should be a one-to-one communication between me and you. And that is as sacred as I don't want to be I mark it as spam every time I get a blast that's like a one to many.
Now there are people, Amy, who block and report every promoted tweet, which I think is stupid because it's not like Twitter doesn't know that that's a promoted tweet and it's going to ignore your block.
I disagree with that because it's like it's clearly labeled, you know, it is what it is. You can dislike it, but that's not – that is like posting on a wall. That is not in your – if you – it's spam. If you do a bulk – direct message, to me that is spam. That is your knowing that that channel is personal and you think you can get my attention, and I absolutely feel betrayed.
Well, who are you to tell me what my expectations should be, Amy? I'm gonna like really go into this argument that is your expectations when you're on these platforms, but they're not everyone's. And I think, you know,
I'll
as
be
I
spamming
found
the like, hell out of you tomorrow.
I'll be reporting the hell out of you. But honestly, like, people come to this agreement, like they come to a social table and there's kind of context and expectation. And a lot of this is unspoken. So we kind of follow the crowd here. But just because something, back to my point with Hans, just because Hans was frustrated by my use of Buffer, I didn't take that as a sign that everyone that sees that I'm using Buffer is going to be insulted. And honestly, if he doesn't like it, good for him. He can unfollow me. And he's since actually been a fan of it once he realizes that, yeah, it's more connected into your social expectation that I think there's this sense that we all need to be hands on keyboard 24/7, and I find that to be BS. Some of these things can wait a few hours for me to respond.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy that he just inside baseball story dogged your steps for quite a while, and every time you posted something in bulk on Facebook, he called you out on it. But I think that's part of the growing process as we, you know, I love, John, your point about, you know, what Facebook Messenger is different than Facebook Wall. I think that it would be interesting maybe the three of us to challenge ourselves and sit down and do some channel mapping and kind of do a heat map when we finally get to writing our book. Like, I'm going to have to do this. I have to chart this now. Of like, and maybe it's my universe, my mental infographic of my expectations channel by channel. But when it's a text, an instant message, a direct message or Facebook Messenger, any of those one-to-one communications, I expect one-to-one. I don't expect that from the wall on Facebook. I don't expect that from maybe broader Twitter. I'm more open to some of the things going on there. I don't have an expectation in email at all. But the more marketers, we ruin everything. Right? We ruin everything. And we get these channels that feel personal and we flood them with crap. We get a bullhorn and we yell into social media. And that is wrong.
Yeah. No one's going to disagree with that. It's terrible behavior and it's kind of gaming the system of finding a way where, oh, people still find this sincere, so let me go ruin that. And then you have to go find something else that's new. But it just puts the onus back on the real relationship. So I don't feel like I don't want to blame the systems. I want to blame the people that do it wrong.
Sure. Hate the player, not the game. And LinkedIn, I just learned there's some tools on LinkedIn that do this very same thing. And the whole concept is people are saying, you can't scale, so we'll make it look like you're more personable than you actually are by doing this. And I just think it's inauthentic. I genuinely do.
Don't you think expectations and context are changing, though? What about the recent Twitter mood, if I can describe however many couple hundred million people as having a mood? What about the current Twitter mood of being kind of fighty and harassing? We've seen examples of a lot of harassment on Twitter, a lot of unwanted attention. It used to be the marketers were the ones that screwed it up, right? We would come in and hey, I hear you're talking about margarine, Matt. Would you like to try a coupon for my margarine? You know, and that's kind of creepy. Although I've heard that millennials are not as creeped out by retargeting and ad stuff like that as people in previous generations. But is something – I think Twitter might be changing context as well over time as we learn how to use it more. And in fact, I'm not quite sure where I'm going with this, but I think people are retreating because the only way to get an ROI at scale is to be more broadcast. I think people are retreating into more private communities, as well as the other reason being that, you know, it's very, you can't block at scale either, right? If you're being harassed, it's very hard to disengage on a platform like Twitter.
That's a great counterbalance to kind of the personal attacks of it, kind of thinking that like there is this giant mass and some people want to have that walled garden. It's more comfortable. But I'm going to stick to the idea that these things continue to evolve, and the way in which we monitor these different platforms and stay in touch with people at scale, I think there is great sincerity to honestly not wanting to forget to stay in touch with some people. Now, if you're staying in touch with them as an automatic email with an automated response that you never actually read and you don't actually remember these people, then I think you are being insincere. But when I think of the tools that I use daily, that's not even something on my mind.
Hey, I want to switch gears a little bit. Hey, Amy, what about using tools to track people? There's some sort of authenticity for Generation 1 social media people who operated at our scale that you knew everybody and you knew what they were doing. And someone would say, oh, Phil. And you'd be like, oh, yeah, Phil. He was just shoveling snow when he went to the ball game, and I think he just got a promotion. So, like, you knew everybody. At least that was one of my magic powers at VMware. Some of the newer tools actually are much better about tracking stuff, and you can compile dossiers on people, and before you meet them, you can just pull up a report and you can see their most recent tweets, and probably ordered by, you know, magnitude of interaction and things like that, so you can get the highlights. This is very similar to what PR people would do with when they would do a press briefing, right? And they would all just compile clippings and profiles of the journalists that they were about to interact with. Do you mind tools that way, these tracking and monitoring tools that help you keep track of people?
See, I was going to say, a shout out to all my developer friends out there. The idea of tracking a notification would be incredible. I still honestly, true disclosure, I do a lot of Sneakernet. I hold a lot of it in my head. I absolutely, it's difficult. You're right. Once you get to a certain point, it's difficult to remember every fact about every person. Though the thing about the three of us, honestly, and I think this is probably true, we retain an inordinate amount of useless information about all of you people listening. Apologies in advance. Like, and I sort of joke, like, I know your cat's names. I know what your favorite pizza topping is, because I'm genuinely interested in people like that. Would it be, I have asked, and in all sincerity, like, can this go into a CRM? Does this have a place in Salesforce? How do salespeople do it? And so in my new job, I've been at sales kickoff all week and been dealing with the real sales team. I'm used to the SEs. I realize, like, I've been a layer behind, in a smaller company, I have access to more people. So I'm asking, like, what are the tricks of the trade? How do you manage your relationships? How do you remember to do this kind of stuff? And it's interesting. So I'm not opposed to some help in my aging brain, but it's when it's doing the communication for me. So developers, please give me a tool that helps me track and alerts me. Hey, you might want to send so-and-so or so-and-so's birthday or this, that, and the other, but don't do it for me. Don't make it opt out where, like, I'm about to send Matt a birthday present. You have to push stop, or I'm going to send him, I don't know, a singing jingle to his voicemail. Unless you stop it, No.
Comms, Amy, if you just stopped arguing and started asking me what tools I use, I could give you a whole set of them that do exactly that. It's not the creepy pretend you're a real person when you're really just a script. It's, hey, how the hell do you organize at scale? I mean, I just started working from home and I'm realizing if I want to hang out with people, I basically have to be my own assistant as well and schedule them and find opportunities and reschedule if we miss it. And I'm looking at combining Doodle with Google Calendar and if then that to script these things and make it possible to, make it easier to engage, because I don't have that time to waste.
That is such a geek move.
And yep. John. I think the equipment might need to be some of those big poofy sumo wrestling suits where Matt and I attack one another. And you
so there are tools out there. Like, I'm using actually one called Nimble right now, which is bills itself as a social CRM. And it'll tell you after you've kind of, primed the pump, it'll tell you, hey, so-and-so has a birthday, or hey, you, or it actually, you classify all your contacts according to how important they are to you. So that, you know, now the problem is these are promises that you make to the software. You're like, oh, I'd like to talk to that person every month. And I don't do that. So, you know, right now Nimble has a list of thousands of people I'm supposed to talk to, have talked to over the last year, and I haven't done any of them. So it kind of breaks down if you don't work the system. But, you know, there are tickler apps and things like that.
Now, admittedly, I could probably expand my tool set and do things less manually than I do now. But I'm comfortable compromising at that line. Like, alert me, help me track, make me smarter, give me a better sort of social CRM, for lack of a better word, something that works, something I can put in. Hell, I'll put it in Salesforce, but let me ring fence it so that everybody can't act on it, you know?
It's a big deal, right? I was contacted the other day by a large technology company about an opportunity that I was ill-suited for, and it was to do influencer marketing for one of their conferences, and, you know, as if I was an actual hands-on practitioner, which I am not. And they obviously got that list from somewhere. I talked to somebody else in that organization, and they said they cringed and laughed and said, please don't work with them. And they said they were embarrassed, right? So obviously the problem of information sharing inside of a company is severe, right? If I have a relationship with Jane, it's very difficult inside of a company, even sales, even when money's on the line, for my coworker to figure out that I have the relationship with Jane and he or she doesn't need to make it right already. I've already made that. So, or can leverage it or whatever, or can be introduced to Jane. So I think that's difficult even in sales when you have accounts and when you have people associated with accounts. It's doubly or triply difficult in social.
Yeah, and that's why there are so many new CRMs popping up to try to dethrone Salesforce. I feel like this is a conversation for Speaking in Tech to dig into the specifics. But what that comes down to is that it sucks. It's terrible right now to know, you know, John and so-and-so, like, they walk their cats in the same park and they have a cat thing together, and you should leverage that relationship in order to make the introduction.
Yeah. I do think a lot of the first generation people, though, are realizing that some of social may have been oversold. And that's the part. This is social media in particular, not necessarily what we do. And it's the part about operating at scale. I was reading a pretty good rant the other day, which I doubt I can find again, about how all the A-listers, which tells you how they thought about these things back in 2000, you know, 9, 10, 11, all the A-listers have now moved on to other things. And the remaining ones are inauthentic, people like Guy Kawasaki. And I think that's true. I've seen a lot of people who were fairly influential in the social media circuit, and I'm making little air quotes with my hands right now, who have gone on to do other things like motivational speaking, or they've moved back to companies or things like that. And so I think this idea that social media was going to be this thing where we could talk to all people at all times and be this like magic wand, I think we've gone past that pipe barrier.
One topic we've never scratched the surface of, and it might not be a geek, but it's still somebody I'd love to talk to. It's just one of these people with one of the, I think you can call them a mega account or mega following, where they have, you know, 100,000, 200,000 followers that they've accrued by just being kind of automated and, but yet engaged at the same time. I don't know how that works and what the value of that is, but it's definitely a thing I see in a strategy.
We have got to have somebody on the show like that, because I'm dying to know, like, what is it like when you've got 50,000 followers and what do you do with that?
I don't know. People think I'm weird, right? I follow 5,000 or 6,000 people, but most of them are people, and most of them are IT people, and I skim. But a lot of people, that's not the way a lot of people use Twitter either.
Well, and just sort of pulling back to the other thing you were saying in terms of people who would engage us either as the Geek Whispers or as individuals, part of the value we bring, part of the stock and trade is the mental Rolodex. You know, it is. Our value comes from the relationships that we have. Mm-hmm. And I can see how people would have a temptation to scale that. That's human nature, you know, make it bigger and then I'll be more valuable. But is there a break point? you know, our community is a little bit niche. So can you get to the outside edge? Can you know everybody? I mean, John, really, it is one of your superpowers, your ability to retain and have that kind of in-depth fact. I don't know. Do you take notes on it? Do you have tools? Because it seems like it's in your head. You know where everybody works. You know where they walk their cats. You know all that stuff.
Whatever you're doing is working.
It is.
The scary part is my wife knows all this too, right? Because that's all I talked about for years. She'll be like, oh, so-and-so, are they still working for such and such? She's good too. She's very accurate. Ah, but you know, you come up, Amy, you come up against human frailty, right? I am now years into this game, and I know a lot of people from over the years, but you know, eventually I hit a limit, right? I'm trying to learn to know new people, and I am learning to know new people, especially in my new gig, but you know, one person can only stretch so much, and corporately, super dangerous, hit by a bus problem, right? So both you guys are now working in startups. How are you attempting to do this? I guess we talked about some of it. You're looking for kind of – you're thinking about it. You're looking for social CRMs. But like if you had to leave in a few months, could you pass on some of your Rolodex and knowledge to the other people?
I think you can pass on the Rolodex. I think the relationships go with you.
Yeah. That's human. That's human nature.
Oh, yeah. I would second that. One thing, though, that I am trying harder to do this time than I have in the past is make it accessible to others so that, you know, in the transparency of information and kind of the openness into what it means to have a community, I'm trying to really measure that. And I know that's such a ridiculous question, but it doesn't stop me from trying to answer it.
With open source, you have a few more trails, right? You can look at mailing list participation and commits and things like that.
Well, exactly, But then trying to normalize them and deduplicate and find uniques and see patterns of people and what gets them to actually want to contribute more versus less. Like, I think that's where it goes from kind of just a number to something of value. I'm trying to do that.
And just to jump in, it's interesting you brought up the sort of startup culture. I think one of the things, and to every CEO or CMO in the sound of our voices, when you institute and drive a culture of openness and sharing, then, you know, the unicorn wranglers are far more likely to write down their knowledge and share tribal knowledge and put it down somewhere. In my current role, we've got a great shared system, and it just makes a lot of sense. And you don't have to go and say, okay, let's ring fence this because this is inappropriate to put these folks into a follow-up cycle. That's just understood and absolutely not to beat the company drum. I think it's a culture that can be replicated. Matt, what you're saying, it seems to be, it can be true. So startups, you know, you've got that chance. You've got the chance to set up the culture, set up one of openness, recognize this is important. And to your point, John, if the tribal knowledge goes out with people, then that's a really valuable asset in a small environment.
Yeah, I have to just strongly second that, Amy. And a flip side story of that is that in a previous situation, I was sitting near a sales guy who his responsibility was just, you know, ground and pound, go through a list of people and call them. And I kept hearing these names overheard, and then they'd hang up, not get any sort of purchase order. And I'd be like, hey, Brender, so-and-so says hi. And I'm like, oh, God, why are you spending your time calling these people I know personally? I have a better introduction into them and they're not going to buy. Or if they are, they're more likely to buy from me than from you. And that lack of communication can be very painful if you are building an influencer marketing program. So I want to say it both as a positive and a negative cautionary tale.
Which I will use as a former debater as a point to prove my point that it's very difficult to scale relationships. And it's an absolute admission that what the three of us do in terms of influence marketing, it will always be one to few. It is very high touch. It is probably very expensive related to traditional demand gen.
You're choosing to operate in the mode of one to few. So I'll get you. So this influencer marketing thing, sure. But there is a more of a stage that you could operate on.
Yeah, and it's what slice
and I think
are you going for?
Yeah,
if
and
you
it's
look
confusing.
At it,
we call it all social media. So
yeah. Right, and if you look at it like more like an R funnel, there's this audience acquisition at the top of the funnel that is a much wider mouth and a lot of people that you can get to know because of the overlapping circles as opposed to just that core niche audience that we've already acquired. Mm-hmm. And both of them I would classify as influencer marketing just with slightly different strategies.
Yeah. Hey, two things we haven't talked about, Dunbar's number and kind of meat space analogs. So Dunbar's number, of course, is the theory from Dunbar that there are certain natural social circle sizes, and I don't even know them off the top of my head, but there's the like your close family, and then there's people you know pretty well, and then there's kind of acquaintances, and then there's, you know, people that you could probably recognize maybe. So people have done a lot of research in social media, and they've shown that that kind of thing applies to social media. You can really only have about 120 close, you know, relationships or whatever the number is. So that applies here. A, you can't F with that, right? You try to have close relationships with 1,000 people, you're going to fail. But B, in meat space, in the sales world, we all do know people that can work a room pretty well. I think I know why they do it, but let me hold that till later. But you know, in meat space, we know kind of super salespeople who do maintain lots and lots and lots of relationships. So that would be the closest real world analog to what we're talking about here, right?
When you say meat space, what do you mean by that, John?
Like a salesperson that like goes to a conference and goes to people's offices and shakes their hand. And I was really thinking more of an event because my example is going to be at an event. But, you know, people who are at an event, who are networking at a conference, and who somehow seem to know thousands of people.
I know. I'm always impressed with – it was funny. I was like, does he mean M-E-E-T or M-E-A-T?
Yeah.
It's like
I just
MySpace.
Kept having flashbacks to V. Bacon when you say
Oh, do I need a new word? Am I too old? What are the kids saying
these
days?
What are the kids
these days? No. No.
In the real world.
Yes, the IRL kind of thing. And I totally get what you're saying. Some people, it does seem to be a practice skill. And in all seriousness, I think I continue to be impressed and think about how traditional salespeople get what we do, ironically, because it is like sales without a quota. They have so many relationships and they seem to be effortless and in their head. So what are they doing? Is it tools? Do they just have a skill? Do they practice? We need to get somebody on here and just quiz them to death and find out.
We do. And I have a previous coworker who's one metric sales guy and is just incredible. The amount of relationships and knowledge he carries with him from job to job is just phenomenal. I asked him a few times. I don't want to spill too many of his beans, but it's not effortless. It is very intentional. It's very very much.
Does he make notes?
Oh, copious notes on paper. He has files. He has spreadsheets of people. Yes. Well, and then he has tools up the wazoo that keep track of where people are going and when to message them to stay in touch. And then uses Salesforce religiously whenever he goes to a new company and just puts in these reminders for every single day and keeps to them. I think that's the real skill.
Yeah. Now, Amy, is he being inauthentic?
No, because he's doing the work himself.
See,
he's taking the notes.
I think he is.
Oh, no, he's scaling. Like, that's to say you have to remember everything you hear and you can't write it down. Like, he's doing the work to engage those people. He's being reminded, but he is actually doing the work. I'm assuming he is doing the outreach himself.
You're right. Actually, I flip-flop quickly. ideally just cut that out. Because, no, you're right. It that part of it is real. He is doing it himself. I think sometimes when interacting from like a community marketing perspective and an influencer marketing perspective, he could be a bit too transactional with me and try to use my relationships in a way I didn't find mutually beneficial for
that's
the community
that's
members.
The man had a quota.
Yeah. And that's where I was just like, I felt like I had to protect the coral reef as we've talked about in the past.
Well, when we were running our influencer marketing programs, we couldn't let them be overused either because those were our relationships. But I mean, it's not like when he, you know, reconnects with Joe Bob that he remembers that, you know, his wife is Mandy and his dog is Skipper, right? He doesn't actually remember that sort of stuff. It's written down. So isn't he by definition being inauthentic?
Sometimes the act of writing it down triggers the memory. I people who are really good at it, when you hear stories, like anecdotal stories about presidents who remember the name of everybody they've ever met and all, it's this insane skill, or, you know, nature versus nurture, who knows, but one way or the other, it's developed to a point where they end up in roles where we turn them into anecdotes because it sticks out, because it's unusual. Yeah, yeah. And we all think, how can we do that?
Well, and I guess where I was going with, I do know a person or two, and I've seen them in action at a conference or at a event, that are able to very quickly make a connection with somebody and then move on. And I think we know how to do that on social, but I think those people are super good at doing it. They look somebody in the eye, they shake their hand, they give them their full attention, you know, and they have an interaction. And then because they're there to network or whatever, then they move on, but they do it, and then they move on in a graceful way.
If I could use my own kids as a dev test environment here, and Matt, having met both of them, I have, my eldest is an engineer and is absolutely struggles to do that. How do you engage? How do you disengage? And in some ways we've talked about, like, when you're reaching an audience that doesn't do social as well as they do tech, you know, you figure out how to make that meet in the middle. And then my youngest, and again, nature, nurture, they're both in the same household. My youngest is going to be elected and absolutely can do that. Exactly what you said. And I mean, she's 7 years old and she can give, I watch her work a room.
It's uncanny.
It's crazy. I'm not even, this is not just a crazy mom. Matt can verify.
No. I can confirm with full belief that she looked me in the eye, said my full name, said it was nice to meet me, just kind of crazy amounts of poise.
So there's something to teach that. You know, can we teach that? Are there tools? I mean, we're back to the whole, like, how much is nature, nurture, you know, and what part can tools do? Because this will be my final comment. I know I'm like talking over everybody.
Let's bring it back to where we started, Amy. You found some tools that you thought were crappy.
Well,
so what are you going to do?
Or evil. No, it was way more than crappy. It's not like they weren't doing what you wanted. It's like, rabble, rabble, rabble. That's not good for anyone.
And it comes from a place of fear. And honestly, here's the place of fear. Because I remember years ago, somebody said, if you rely totally on Google search for your little independent business that you have a website for, and you maximize SEO, and you don't do sort of independent drive to your website, then Google owns the relationship with your customer because your brand isn't fully branded. People can't remember you well enough to go to you directly, go to Google. And think about how many sites that you know that you type in directly because the brand is so strong and you go there, versus things you're like, what is that sub shop that I like on the corner? I know that's like a little bit of an extreme example, but it stayed with me for years. And I still think about that in terms of these social tools. When does the tool own the relationship versus you?
Damn, that nails it.
Ooh.
Does that mean I win?
No, actually, I think you've actually disproven yourself over and over again this whole conversation, because it hasn't once been that these tools are somehow like fundamentally inauthentic and evil. It has to do with the people and the intentions and whether people take action to continue to build relationships or whether they attempt to somehow fake them. And anyone faking that relationship in the social world, I think there's such a bullshit detector on all of us 24/7 since we're being overwhelmed with information that I honestly have trust that the good tools help you do this at scale well, and the bad tools or the bad users of the tools just will shine a light on their own inauthentic behavior.
You know, Matt, there are, even now, in the future tense, not a Black Mirror scenario, there are call center people who respond only off of soundboards. Like, everything they say has been pre-recorded, and they just push buttons.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, AI is getting, actually, AI is a terrible term, but, you know, the automated translation and response, you know, conversational technologies are getting pretty good.
Yeah.
Would you know, we may be headed, maybe we'll be replaced by robots.
Well, I think, yeah, honestly, bring up a point of that gets pretty deep. Like, this is like Alan Turing level. When we can't detect that it's inauthentic, is it actually authentic?
Booyah.
Now, you would love the age of robots. You're like, you know, bring on the cat robots.
No, he's Mega not cat. A robot. He does not like robots. He would not like to be... Now, there are customer service people, even on Twitter, of course, who also have scripts. They don't have soundboards, sure. But they have scripts.
But you know it, and yeah, it's yeah. terrible.
Yeah,
but if somebody's
effective.
Script we is to... so good that they seem like they're really engaging, is it actually a script? That's like a we're getting ridiculously philosophical, but let's just say we haven't hit that day yet.
Yeah.
If the tree falls in the woods, is it a robot?
we're getting late night college freshman dorm sort of tipsy here. So I'm going to bring it to a close. Amy, you started us all off with this tools you don't like. I forget. Did we give you a final statement?
You know, I actually think somewhere between Matt's love of tools and your fair don't paint everything with a single brush, I'm going to bend on the, I think things that notify you and help you organize are good. I think things that respond on your behalf with the intent to imply personal relationship but are not are inauthentic. And I think that also the further gradation that you brought, John, is that is by channel. So if you send me a text, a DM, if it's meant to be one-to-one and that is a private channel of communication I've opened to you because all of that has to be mutually opted in and you fake that, I'm going to unfollow you and I'm going to call you out in person with a handwritten bless your heart next time I see you.
Works for me. Matt?
There are enough asterisks on Amy's that I feel comfortable agreeing with it.
Yeah.
Bless your heart, Matt.
It comes down to be a real person, use things in insincere and authentic ways, and be empathetic with your audience, and you pretty much won't suck at whatever you're doing, whether that's marketing, engineering, or any sort of relationship building.
Social media is not magic.
Nope, it's people.
It's people. We've been saying it all along. Social media marketing actually really is terrible. Still terrible.
Thank God we all can agree on that.
I have less patience for it, so that's telling me we're moving into a new phase of kind of social media understanding and society in general. I'm having difficulty consulting in the realm of social media marketing because I just don't think it's super effective. I do love consulting and working with people about making relationships. So there you go. That's where I am. Social media can go to hell as far as I'm concerned. Drop the mic.
At least we still got a common enemy.
There's always common enemies.
Booyah. With that mic drop, you've listened to another episode of The Geek Whisperers. We'll be back interviewing geeks next time. Thanks. You've been listening to The Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as Jay Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
But what the hell are you talking about? Being loud.
Bless you. Sorry.
No, you were not.
Oh my gosh, I'm so
I thought that was John.
No, that was not. It's not workplace appropriate, that's why.
You. Oh, I'm so pumped for the edit reel.